Hello and welcome to another Heavy Meta. I'm Bryce Kundick.
And I'm Kelly Boyven.
And today we're talking, what are we talking about today, Kelly?
Today we're going to be talking about you. We're going to be doing an author interview with Bryce Moore, otherwise known as Bryce Kundick.
Full name, Bryce Moore Kundick. Now, just a disclaimer before we get into this, the goal is to ultimately do more of these author interviews, but we wanted to sort of break our teeth in with a friendly audience. And since I'm friendly, we're just using me.
No broken teeth.
Otherwise, it feels a little bit strange doing a podcast interview with myself. So
it does. It feels strange for me, too.
There you go. But so if you are an author and have written something and would like to be on our program, please get in touch with either Kelly or me, and we would be happy to have you on.
We would love that. Okay, so let's just jump right into this. Have you always been a writer?
Have I always been a writer? Pretty much. Not when I was in kindergarten. As long as I could write, I have been writing. Mm-hmm. I started my first book when I was in second or third grade. It was called The Secret of Cat's Eyes Cave.
Wow.
And I remember I wanted it to be really, really creepy. And so I set it, because you got to pick your setting carefully. The date was, it was Halloween and Friday the 13th on the same day.
Wow.
And my teacher was like, Bryce, that can't happen. And I was like, why not? She's like, well, Halloween's always on the 31st and Friday the 13th is always on the 13th. And I thought about it and I was like, but 13 is just 31 backwards. So maybe one year it could work. And she just gave up at that point.
Maybe. There's no arguing with that.
I've been writing, not books. I didn't finish my first book until sophomore year of college, but I've been tinkering for a long time.
Okay. And what do you think it is about fiction writers that drives them to create worlds and people them with their own creations? And
these are hard questions. Why are you asking me these hard questions?
Because that's just the kind of person
that's
just I am.
Hard-hitting interview. I think it's probably going to be something different for everybody. For me personally, I started writing just because I thought it would be fun. I like to read. Mainly a lot of times I'll come across a book that I'm like, this book was fine, but I really wish it had done this at this point, or the character had done that, or this felt off, and so I wanted to do my own version.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just became fun. I get to write exactly what I want to read. And my style of writing is very organic.
Mm-hmm.
So I will start off with a general plot idea, like, okay, there's going to be this kid, and it's going to be sort of like Something Wicked This Way Comes meets something else, and I don't know much about it. And so as I start writing it, I find out more about the main character. I find out more about the antagonists, the problems. Since I write fantasy, that's usually how I find out about the fantasy system. It just sort of comes, I don't know where it comes from. I'd say drugs, but it's not drugs. And I can't even say coffee because I don't drink coffee. So
yeah.
And I can't even
You're
say sugar
own.
At this point. Sleep deprivation. That's where it comes from.
That's the power.
I mind that heavily.
Yeah. Yep. Good to know. How do you decide which ideas will make a good story?
I sort of jam them together and see if they feel good. I've compared it sometimes to it's like a Rubik's Cube, but mm-hmm. like by feel. And so sometimes you keep on mixing the ideas up. And then when they click into place, it just feels right. It's like, oh, that fits really well together. I have no color sense, no anything. Like, I'm terrible at fashion sense, but I imagine it's something sort of like someone looking at some clothes and being like, those look really good together. Uh-huh. Except I don't ever have that feeling. I just know that I've got a shirt, I've got pants and shoes. I'm pretty much good to go. But with writing, it's much more. Yeah, just keep on moving it around, and the same thing happens with revision. I'll reread what I've written, and I'll know there's something off here, there's something off here, it just doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very intuitive process with you.
For me, yeah, I don't know, it doesn't taste right, although you don't eat words, typically. But it's just, it just feels off, it's like, that could be better.
Yeah. Well, tell me about your process. How do you write? How does writing fit in with a full-time job and a family and all of the things that you do?
For me, I'm very goal-oriented. That's how I keep moving and everything. So when I'm writing new material, I write for an hour a day, but it has to be 1,000 words. So sometimes the 1,000 words takes longer than an hour, in which case that's just too bad. I have to sit there until I'm done. I had to make that...
You're really mean.
I have to be. Well, because otherwise, honestly, if you say, oh, I'm going to write for an hour, you'll just sit there and be like, yeah, well, I was checking Facebook, and that was research, yeah. You know,
yeah.
And you can research a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I'm writing, a lot of times there's lots of other things I'd rather be doing that I discover while I'm writing. I'm like, you know, I really would rather be going to the dentist, or I'd rather be doing just about anything. But... I really love having written.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once it's done, it feels like exercise. It's like, I feel really good. That's done now. So, yeah, these days I come into work a bit early so that I can go home earlier. And then as soon as I get home, I write, and it takes me about an hour. When I'm revising, it's a bit different. Then it's more of a time length, although sometimes I shoot to revise 2,000 words an hour. Just because it's easier to revise than it is to write fresh stuff. But just, I mean, I don't know. I remember I took a lot of creative writing classes at BYU, and a lot of my co-students, whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
They would write when the muse hit them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, well, I have to be in the right mood, and I have to be in the right place, and with the right computer, drinking the right soft drink. And and I just said, you know, that's silly.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like...
It's a discipline.
Right. When I come into work at the library, it's not like, well, today's not really a library work day. I have to be in the right mood for this. No, I mean, you know, no one says... You don't go to the doctor and it's like, I'd give you a prescription, but I'm not feeling it right now. And so I feel very much the same way about writing. It's just butt in seat, hands on keyboard, and type.
So what if you're in the middle of a sentence and you've hit your 1,000 words? Do you stop right there, or...
If I got a groove going, I'll follow that groove a little bit. But I found it's much better to stop when I still know what I'm going to write next, than to write myself out.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the well goes completely dry, and then I'm really hosed the next day when I'm trying to figure out what to write. So yeah, I'll finish the sentence, but I'll finish the paragraph or the little piece, but I'm perfectly fine just setting it aside and coming back the next day.
Okay. If you could give a budding writer one piece of advice, what would it be?
So beyond what I've already said, which is actually write, I would probably say to finish what they write. So finish what you start. It's really tempting. Writing a book is a lot like a relationship. So for the first third of the book, you can be really excited. You know, everything's new. It's a lot. It's fun. Oh boy! You know, it's like you're looking forward to going back to it. You get to the second third, and you know that book pretty well, and you know the characters, and you know their problems, and you know that you're having difficulty with this section and that section, and you start seeing all the problems, and you're like, this is garbage. I want to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And you start having other ideas that wouldn't it be nice to write that book instead?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really tempting to ditch what you're writing right now because it's, well, I've got such a better idea for something else. This was, and really you have to plow through that.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get through the second third, it generally improves. And then the last third, for me at least, goes quickly. But that middle third, it's discipline. You have to say, I'm going to keep writing. And also just acknowledge the fact that... Some of what you're writing is not going to be any good.
Mm-hmm.
Just decide, you know what? It's okay. I'm just going to finish this book to have finished the book. I will learn something about book writing by writing a book. And if it's no good, that's okay. Just get through it.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a what if sort of question.
Okay.
If you could rewrite the fate of any fictional character, who would it be?
Rewrite the fate of any fictional character? Jeez. I have no idea. I mean, we'll do this more like just thought association. You said that, and the first person to come into my mind was Roy Hobbs from The Natural. because I love the movie version and I love the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm spoiling it all for you right now, but if you read the book and you see the movie, they're very different. Because in the movie, Robert Redford gets up to bat and he belts it out of the park and he wins and everyone's like very happy. And in the book, he strikes out.
Oh no.
And
that's terrible.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It feels much truer to the book.
Yeah.
But I'm still sort of bitter about that. It's my favorite sports movie. I'm like, come on. Why?
Give him a hat.
Yeah, no, it's really rough on him. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. The thing is, I would only want to rewrite the ending to a book that I liked. And if I liked the book, well, then I liked how it ended. I mean, usually, you know.
Yeah.
There have been some Stephen King books that I don't like the ending. But I never know. I don't know how I would end it.
Yeah.
So it's not, I mean, like, I'm certainly not going to be like, well, yeah, I do it like this because I can't blame them for ending it that way because I have no better ideas. It's like, you know, I don't know how I'd end it. So does that answer your question more or less?
It does.
Okay.
It does, yeah.
Wait, what character would you rewrite?
I would definitely not let Old Yeller get rabies if it was up to me.
Spoilers? We're just spoiling everything. Yeah, like where the Redfern grows. Is
yes.
What is that? What's up with
no
that?
No dead dogs.
That's especially with stupid raccoons
and
axes. And
yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Scarred for
life
from that book.
I agree. That's our new motto around here. No dead dogs ever. And with that, we're going to take a little break and play you a song. And when we come back, Bryce is going to talk to us about his new book, The Memory Thief. Hey, welcome back. We're talking to Bryce Moore, the author of The Memory Thief. And Bryce, tell us a little bit about this book, would you?
My publisher has described it as Something Wicked This Way Comes meets Inside Out, which is way cool. And I was like, why didn't I think of that? And she actually pointed out, she's like, well, Inside Out hadn't been made when you wrote the book and sent it to us. So you couldn't have, you know, I was like, okay. Well, so I was ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of a creepy-ish, if it was a genre, I'd call it Disney horror. So in the same vein as Something Wicked This Way Comes, if you've seen that, or Watcher in the Woods. Mm-hmm. I'm really dating myself. These are old 80s Disney movies. But I watched them when I was a kid, and they freaked me out then, and so they sort of stuck with me.
Scarred. He's scarred.
So the main character is a 12-year-old boy named Benji. He goes to the local fair, which happens to be here, the Farmington Fair.
Thinly disguised. Yes.
I do call it the Livingston Fair, mainly because I didn't want any, like, upset people writing me and being like, you got this detail wrong or you got this wrong. It's like, and then I can be like, oh, but this is the Livingston Fair, so I got it right. So he goes to the fair and meets this guy who calls himself a memory artist. And his name's Lewis, and he's able to take memories from people and show them to other people or give them to people. And Benji's like, whoa, this is way cool. But soon thereafter, he meets another person. Her name's Genevieve, and she's out there, and she's actively stealing memories from people and not giving them anything back in return. And it's basically just like... She's a memory vampire. She's just sucking the memories from all the people in town, and she's going to sell it on the black market.
Pretty sinister.
Yeah, she's not a nice person.
I can tell.
And so she steals the memories of his twin sister, the memories his twin sister has of him.
Oh.
So she doesn't have any memory that she has a twin at all. And he's very upset by this, and adventure ensues. So it is kind of creepy. There's a fantasy element going on, but I think it's a fun book.
And it's written for the 8 to 12 age range.
Yeah.
And now this, you know, as you said, this is kind of a creepier story, and could have really worked well with any age group. So why did you decide to sort of focus on that age reader, the 8 to 12 year old, instead of going for a YA or going for adult, because you could have easily ramped it up or down. So.
And actually, as I was writing it, there was a few times that I had to ramp it down a bit. My first book that came out, Vodnik, was definitely for teens,
mm-hmm.
older teens. This one, I made it for middle grade audience because a couple reasons. Number one, I wanted to switch things up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I wanted something shorter. This is only about 55,000 words. Vodnik was 106, so it's like half the length of Vodnik. And then the third reason was that I decided to write one specifically for my son,
mm-hmm.
who at that time was about 9 or 10. So this is squarely
mm-hmm.
in his age range. And so
right.
I just thought, this will be fun, do something different. Each one of my books, I try and do something I haven't done before because it gets boring
mm-hmm.
otherwise. So, yeah, I just wanted to try something new.
And how much do you use your own children as sort of... how much data mining do you do with your own children? Just
not a ton, I don't think.
No?
I mean, I might think, well, what would my son think is cool?
Mm-hmm.
Or what would my daughter like? As far as how the characters behave, I think I mine myself much more.
Yeah.
I try and think back, okay, well, what would I do in this situation? Because, you know, even though, yeah, I know my kids really well, I know myself better.
Yeah.
And so I think I end up mining my own experiences quite a bit more than I do my kids. But I don't know, maybe... You'd have to ask, like, my wife or my kids that. They'd be like, oh, well, it was this. I don't know.
Yeah. And how can people get a hold of this book?
Until March, it's exclusive at Barnes & Noble. So if you
okay.
want to order it, you can either go to Augusta, where I'll be doing a book signing on December, like, 17th.
Mark your calendars.
Yeah. Come on out. Or just go to barnesandnoble.com and order it there. But then come March 20th? Let's see, it came out in September, October, November, December, January, February. Yeah, March 20th, it'll be available wherever books are sold.
Okay.
Although you might have to, like, request it.
Special order.
I'm under no illusions that, like, everyone's going to rush. Although, it's been fun, because it was exclusive to Barnes & Noble, it's been in all Barnes & Nobles across the country, and
Whoa.
All my friends have been...
Like,
taking,
big time.
Yeah, they've been taking pictures of it and sending it to me, and, like, so that's been entertaining.
Yeah.
Like that.
That would be. So,
yeah.
Yes, Christmas is coming. If you have an 8 to 12-year-old middle grade reader on your Christmas list, The Memory Thief is in Barnes & Nobles.
And kids like them in multiples. They
yeah.
discovered they really like building. It's like Legos.
It's like blocks.
It's like
yeah.
blocks. So you
yeah.
should really get probably about 30 or 40.
Yeah, buy the box load.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah definitely. I might
Absolutely.
Be able to work out a discount for you if you do that. So
okay.
Just
so
know.
You heard it here first. Bryce's own personal discount
yeah.
available for you if you buy them by the box. So what's in the pipeline? Anything?
What's in the pipeline? I'm always writing. I have a book on submission right now called Our Lady of Questionable Morals. It is a sort of a mix-up between Harry Potter and Ocean's 11.
Oh.
Is how I describe that one. So
I love heist
yeah,
movies
it
and
is a,
heist books.
So there's various heists in this book. One of my favorite heists they do in it is they have to steal a panda bear from the National Zoo.
Oh.
Actually, no, they have to ride it through the front gates of the National Zoo. They can't just steal it. They have to ride it through. No pandas were harmed
in the making of this book,
I swear. So that one's out right now. It's sort of like a sinister school. It's a school for magic, but people learn how to use magic for nefarious means, deeds.
Uh-huh.
But the main character maybe doesn't like being as mean as everybody else.
Uh-huh.
He's still not a nice guy. I mean, I wouldn't want him to date my daughter.
Right.
But, you know... He's sort of a criminal with a heart of gold sort of thing. So there's...
This is so like Hogwarts for delinquents, basically, is...
Yeah, but American style, and yeah.
yeah.
It's a fun book.
It
I like it.
Fun.
I don't. It hasn't been bought yet, so if there's any editors out there listening to this that really want it...
I
want to
read about these heists.
Yeah,
buy
so
this
there
book.
You go. So there's that. There's another book that is with my agents right now. It's called Magic at 30,000 Feet. I would describe that as Hunger Games in an airplane. It's very violent. It's got the highest body count of any of my books so far.
Wow.
But yeah, there's a tournament to the death for who's going to be the supreme magic user for the next 200-300 years. And it's on a plane. And I explained it in the book.
Mayhem.
Yeah, mayhem.
Mayhem and mayhem.
It's another young adult, of
oh,
course.
Yeah.
Teen finds himself in the middle of this. So that's, I enjoyed that one. And then the book I just started writing is actually not fantasy at all. It's based on H.H. Holmes. He was America's first serial killer. This is a sick and twisted man who lived in Chicago in about around 1894. He was there for the Chicago World's Fair. And he built a house with the express purpose of killing people. It got labeled the Murder Castle.
Is this one a picture book? Or?
No, not a picture book. Main character's a young woman whose sister has disappeared.
Oh.
And as she investigates, she believes that her sister might have been killed by this man.
Oh.
And no one believes her. And so she decides to go undercover at the Murder Castle to find out what was going on. So I'm about 10,000 words into that one.
You're a creepy guy.
Thanks, that's really nice. I try.
That sounds really, really
yeah, we'll see.
I'm really
excited to write it.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bryce. And we're going to move on to Bryce's top 10 list of, what are we doing? Top 10 list
well,
of?
Okay, so I try and do, okay, so this is Bryce Kundick now. This is no longer Bryce Moore.
Bryce Moore, yes.
He left.
And
now Bryce Kundick is here. I like doing these top 10 lists because I'm a sucker for top 10 lists. And I decided that since today was our first day talking to an author, even though it was just me and Bryce Moore, I would do my top 10 movies that have to do with writing and writers.
Okay.
So the disclaimer is that I have to have seen it.
All right.
So there were some on here that I'm sure are good, but I haven't seen it. And it has to be about writing. And so I'll start off by saying the ones that did not make my top 10 list. I had on here Her Alibi, the Tom Selleck murder mystery, which is interesting. I've seen it multiple times. I like it okay, but it's not, I mean, it's not like a great movie. As Good as It Gets with Jack Nicholson, who plays a writer in that. Although it's more about OCD in that than it is writing, which is why it didn't make the list. Finding Neverland, which is about Barry.
Yes.
About Peter Pan. And then Shadowlands, which is a C.S. Lewis biopic. That also I haven't seen enough, as much as I'd need to be able to put it on this list. So
okay.
I'm going to try and not have this go too long. But number 10, I went with Barton Fink. Have you seen Barton Fink?
I have not.
It's a Coen Brothers movie. John Turturro. Turturro?
Turturro.
Yeah, I think I'm saying his name right. Kind of a... Honestly, a lot of lists have it higher. I didn't love it. I am a big Coen Brothers fan. I didn't love this movie.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. So that's why it's 10. But I felt like I ought to put it on there because a lot of people put it up as their, like, a number one or number two, and I was like...
So you caved, basically.
I didn't. Hey, it's not number one or number two, is it? It's 10. So I wanted to show that I had some taste, but not the right kind of taste, I guess. So yeah, it's just this guy. He's been hired to write, as I recall, a screenplay, and he gets a case of writer's block. And it's a Coen Brothers movie, so it's very funky.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I feel like I ought to give it another shot.
Okay. Bryce is going to revisit.
Yeah.
Number 10.
Number 9, Capote. You seen Capote? Capote, it's with, what's his bucket, who died?
Uh-huh. The guy with three names.
Yes, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
There you go.
Thank you. You
You're
said three
welcome.
Names and I remembered. And he plays Truman Capote. Who, if you don't know and you're not aware, he was best buds with the author of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Harper Lee.
And he also wrote a big book about a killing in the South. These two men went into a house and killed the family, and
yes.
They were on death row, and so he wanted... You want to talk about a creepy guy? I'm not writing about it. Like, I just interviewed serial killers. It's not like I time traveled back to interview H.H. Holmes. But yeah.
Yes.
It's a good movie. It's just creepy, though. I mean, it's kind of a downer.
Yeah, he was an odd individual.
Yeah, and Philip Seymour Hoffman does a great job in that. I mean, he's a very good actor in that. But you're not going to go out of there thinking, I really would like to get to know that man better. Number 8, I went with Julie and Julia.
I have seen that one.
That's the one about Julia Child.
Yes.
And how she became Julia Child. Not like she wasn't Julia Child when she was born, but how she became... renowned cooking person.
Renowned chef. Julia Child.
So it's about a blogger who's writing about Julia Child, and so we see things in the present day from her point of view, and then we see things back in Julia Child's day when she was just starting out. And it's a good book.
It's a good movie. Yes.
The
blogger is sort of working her way through Julia Child's
through the book, How to Cook or something like that, whatever. Cooking is fun.
Something about French cooking, I don't know.
How to master... French cooking
yes.
stuff. You can tell that Kelly and I are very
big
experienced.
On cookbooks.
Oh, yeah. So it's a good book, a good movie. I recommend it. Seven, Shakespeare in Love.
Yes.
Oscar-winning movie, Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
With, I'm blanking on the name.
Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
Gwyneth
oh, there
Paltrow?
You go. See, I knew. You
say
you
once
have,
in a while I see a movie.
Every now and then. Really good movie. You know, it's got a lot of in jokes if you know your Shakespeare, and so you can laugh about this, that, and the other. I've seen. There's an interesting spoof. George Lucas in Love. I don't know if you've seen that ever.
No, that would not entice me, no.
But it's got a lot of the same sort of things. You'll see, like, George Lucas is a young budding film writer, and he sees all these things that you're like, oh, so that's where he got that in Star Wars, and that's where he got that. That's funny. But, so, you know, it's about, I mean, Shakespeare's a writer.
Yes.
I figured that
he wrote a little Shakespeare.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
Number five, Stranger Than Fiction. This is a movie with Will Ferrell in it. He plays a man who discovers that he is the main character in an author's book, but he's in the same world. And like he's normal. He's like you and me,
yes.
Except this author is controlling his life by what she's writing. And she's basically written that he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want to die, so his goal is to track down the author and persuade her to please change the ending so he doesn't die.
Spare his life. Rewrite that chapter.
Very meta, very fun. I like that. I like that movie a lot. Number three, I went with... Oh, no, I skipped number four. Number four, this is another one that really could have been higher up there, The Shining.
Yes.
Jack Nicholson. I mean, that is one. I mean, when you think movies about writers, I guess The Shining often comes to mind. He goes to a remote hotel in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
With his family, his wife, and his young child, because
yes.
they're gonna sort of nestle in there for
That's
winter,
right. That's right.
Have no contact with the outside world, and he ends up going crazy and killing everybody because he's a Stephen King character, and that's just what they're
and
contractually
what they
obligated
do.
To do.
That's right.
You know,
yes, in the creepiest way possible.
Yes.
Yes.
So this was directed by Stanley Kubrick. Really, a fantastic movie.
It is a good movie.
But very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially about how the moon landing was a hoax, but that's a subject for another time. But you can, if you want to go down, if there's any rabbit holes.
I don't remember that particular plot twist.
Go online and research The Shining and Moon Landing,
okay.
And you'll see a whole bunch of people basically have a lot of time on their hands, and they use it to do interesting things, like find connections about moon landing hoaxes, Stanley Kubrick. Because the theory is that Stanley Kubrick directed the moon landing hoax, and The Shining was his way of admitting it.
Oh, okay.
You're giving me funny looks.
Well, I will probably never have enough time to look that up. But,
well, but
you, know,
you,
if I ever
you
do.
The people listening.
Oh.
I mean,
the
they're listening to us.
That's right. So
let's
they obviously
face it,
have
they've
time.
Got time. Number three. This one was not on any lists, and it's one of my favorite Woody Allen movies, Bullets Over Broadway. I think one of the reasons it's my favorite, one of my favorite Woody Allen movies, is it's also a John Cusack movie, and I really like John Cusack movies.
I also really like John Cusack.
Then you should watch Bullets Over Broadway.
I don't like Woody Allen.
But you should watch Bullets Over Broadway anyway. I don't think Woody Allen's in it. It's just straight, it's not one where Woody Allen plays a putz. It's John Cusack playing Woody Allen. But, you know,
yeah.
Lots of fun. He's a writer. He's trying to write, I believe, a musical. And he gets writer's block. I mean, you got to figure a lot of these plots were writers who had writer's block and like, well, how can I somehow incorporate this into the plot
and make money doing
yes.
it?
Yes, but I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun, and you should check that one out. Number two, returning to Stephen King with Misery.
Misery, yes.
I'm your number
Even
one
Andrew's
fan.
Nodding over Misery.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's break some ankles.
Oh yuck! Yeah. Really brutal movie. I don't really ever want to see it again.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's just... A woman who loves an author. The author kills
really,
off her...
Really loves him.
Oh, yeah. He kills off her favorite character. And so she decides, as most people decide in that situation, I will kidnap him, handcuff him to a bed, and force him to write a new book with my favorite character in it.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, I'll take a sledgehammer to his ankles. And, you know.
Yeah. And he's going to stay a while.
That is, frankly, how I finished Memory Thief. I had to break a few ankles of my own, and I managed it. So that, I thought...
Yeah, way to take one for the team.
I know. And my number one movie, And this is another one that was not on any lists, but it's Funny Farm with Chevy Chase.
I do remember that one as well.
And I personally...
That's in the Wayback Machine.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
He plays an author who moves to the countryside in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his dream. Well, he was a radio... I think he was like a radio host or something, or a sports radio guy.
Yeah.
But he's got this big dream of writing the great American novel, and he's going to do great. And so he moves to the country. He starts writing, and... He can't write a book worth beans.
And all the locals hate him.
Yes. And the reason this comes my number one, because it's got my favorite scene. I don't think he's even finished the book yet. He's written like the first third. And he gives it to his wife for their anniversary present. And they've gone to like this secluded, they're like going to have a romantic getaway. And he gets this box is all wrapped in a bow. It's like here. And she's all excited. What could it be? And she opens it up and it's a piece of his book. And he's like, well, read it. And she's like, oh, okay. And so she sits down, and he sits down across from her, and he's just staring at her. And she's like, you mean read it now? He's like, yeah. And so she starts to read it, and then he's like, you're not laughing. There was a funny part right there. You're not. And so, you know, I just always have that scene in my head of, you know, that when people are reading your stuff, you don't want to, I don't want to be anywhere near where people are reading my things, because because you're like, they should be laughing now.
Yes.
They're not laughing.
I remember from that movie, I think it's the male person that keeps like going by the driveway or something at high speed, and they get a dog because, you know, having a dog is part of country life, and the dog promptly runs away and never returns, and is seen throughout the movie barking and running.
Yes. It's a fun movie. I love that. I've seen that movie many, many times, and I would recommend it to anybody. It's fun, it's funny, entertaining, a great way to spend a couple hours.
And that's Bryce's number one.
There you go. So that's what we have for you this week. And tune in next week when we'll have more exciting things. And again, one last plug. If you're an author and you're local, please get in touch with us. We would love to interview you.
And we'll do a better job.
I think some of those questions, we will ask you the same questions, except you'll know that they're coming.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we could, like, make a pattern. Have some
signature questions.
Yes, it's Kelly's signature questions.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, and have a great day.